of Darren, Donick, and Chase. A little Friday afternoon action. Willie Donick here with you. Let's take roll. Darren McFarland, voice issues. Off. Can't go. Trying to bounce back for tomorrow night, Saturday night in Smashville. Chase McCabe. Vacation. Out. Can't go. We will soldier on. Elijah Campbell, behind the glass, here, present,
present.
Ready to go.
That's right. That's one of us here. Half the show is here today.
Thinking we're going to have a special guest star today, I think.
Hopefully. A Robin to your Batman today, maybe.
We think we got one, but I guess I'll hold off until he arrives. He or she. I think it's a he.
It's a he as far as we know.
As far as we know.
Plans can change. They always change.
Yeah. A lot going on the show today. Of course, Super Bowl Sunday coming up, and we will have a chance for you to get some perspective on the game, as we've done all week. Also, you'll have a chance to put people on the list. We'll have excellent tickets to give away today, some good prizes. We have You Just Made the List, and we have the Super Bowl edition of Pick 6 coming up during the 1 o'clock hour, so you'll want to come back by for that. Post Malone tickets for Pick 6. That will be fun. And for You Just Made the List, Roger Waters. So a couple of different generations there. A couple of different genres. So whatever floats your boat. You probably like one of those two at least, if not both. Right?
Oh, yeah. Or if you're Darren, you like both. I'm more of a Roger Waters guy myself. I'm going through a big Pink Floyd kick. So that would be what I'd be shooting for if I was a listener.
Yeah. I could handle either one of those. Those aren't bad. Those aren't bad. We got a lot to talk about today. We're going to go out to San Francisco. We'll get some insight on the 49ers. We've got Alan Bell that will join us today to talk a little pro football for him. And in addition, Penny Collins will join us. Tennessee State basketball coach. That's coming up just in the next segment. So Tennessee State, A, playing some good basketball. B, you may have seen yesterday in the news cycles the partnership that the Predators and Tennessee State have put together. And we'll tell you more about that. Really cool program. But we'll talk to Coach Penny about their game coming up this weekend. TSU is having a nice season under Coach Penny. Hal Gill will join us. He's back home. Of course, the Predators back in action tomorrow night. They swept the back-to-back road games. Both white knucklers. Both went right down to the wire. One goal wins last night in a shootout. So we'll certainly be discussing that game. Hal will join us at 1:45, and we will get into that. So lots going on. Elijah, last night, I know you were a basketball junkie. I got a chance after the Predators game was over. I flipped one channel over, and Gonzaga's playing. Gonzaga.
Ah, nice.
At Santa Clara. Santa Clara's having a pretty good year. I just decided, you know what, I hadn't seen Gonzaga play. Let's watch Gonzaga.
Okay. What are your thoughts, your initial thoughts? I think this might be the best offensive team in the country right now, personally.
Well, in the KenPom ratings, they're glowing. But my first thought was, this looks like Gonzaga from 5 years ago, 7 years ago, 10 years ago. I mean, it's amazing how he finds the same kind of players year in and year out. The names change, but they play the same way. But the yearly question will, I'm sure, linger. Because Santa Clara is a pretty good team, and they hung in there for a long time, but Gonzaga was just better, even though they lost their big man. Guy came down on his ankle. They lost a key guy, and they still cruised for the most part. You know, they held them off. They never really were threatened to lose the game when I was watching. But the offensive numbers, do they come because of the schedule they play? Largely, they do, right, to some degree.
But it does translate
when they play better teams, but how good is it? How good will it be when they get into the tournament?
I think they tested themselves pretty well this year in the non-conference. Their strength of record schedule is one of the tops in the country on both KenPom and College Basketball Reference. It's just once they get to their conference schedule, every year it's always the question of, is Gonzaga actually good, or are they just playing WCC teams twice a week? And no one gets to see them, so all we see are the box scores in which Gonzaga is clubbing these teams by 30. I think this year might be a little different. The WCC is a little better this year. St. Mary's is a pretty good team. St. Mary's will be an at-large bid more than likely. They returned pretty much everyone from last year, and they've had a pretty solid season, even after a little shaky start. But this Gonzaga team, I mean, losing Petrušev, I don't know how long he's out. You mentioned him hurting his ankle last night.
No, I don't think it was him. It was Killian Tilly.
Oh, it was Tilly.
Yeah,
oh,
he
man.
Went down.
Yeah, I didn't get to catch the game last night. But, yeah, Tilly's pretty good. Tilly would be a first-round NBA draft pick, too. Or at least he should be, but he's had so many troubles with injuries.
That's what they were saying. They were chronicling a lot of injuries. But Petrušev had a big game. He was dominant. It's the yearly question with Gonzaga. Mm-hmm. We know they're good. The question is, are they championship kind of good?
I think they're not going to lose.
They might lose one more.
Yeah,
at the most between now and the start of the tournament, right? Are they a one seed kind of thing?
Oh, maybe. Yeah, 100%. Even if they lose to like St. Mary's, like they did last year in the conference championship game, I have a hard time not seeing them being a one seed this year, especially the way this team is and the way they rate, especially on KenPom and other like advanced metrics. Have this team as the best overall offensive team in the country. And you say, you know, you ask the question of how's it going to look in March? I think of all the Gonzaga teams that we've seen in the past kind of fall in the second round or Sweet 16. This one might be a little different just because of the experience. They got a lot of grad transfers, a couple transfers from group of five schools. The Woolridge kid, he's Ryan Woolridge, their point guard from North Texas, is probably the most underrated point guard in the country, but no one ever saw him. Yeah, because he played at North Texas. Unless you watched a lot of Conference USA basketball, you just weren't aware of how good he was. But this might be the most experienced Gonzaga team in a long time. They just don't have all the experience together, so they've had to kind of learn how to play with each other as a team. This season, I think this team can go pretty far. And if you told me to pick a national champion right now, I don't know of many other teams other than Gonzaga just because of those factors. And I think with the WCC being a little better this year, now it's obviously not great, but it's a little better than it has been in the past because Santa Clara is better. St. Mary's is pretty good. BYU is better this year. Mm. They're going to be a little more tested this year than they have in the past, so I still think they should be a favorite to win the whole thing.
We'll see. No games in the SEC last night. Full slate, of course, coming up tomorrow. We mentioned Tennessee State's win. We'll certainly get to them in the next segment with Coach Brian Collins. Austin Peay and Murray State stay undefeated in the OVC last night with easy wins. Belmont got a win at Tennessee Tech. Now it's Tennessee State will play Tennessee Tech in Cookeville tomorrow. Of course, Belmont is 6-3 in the league, but they've lost at Austin Peay and at Murray State. So just keeping an eye on that OVC race. It'll be very busy and leading up, of course, to seeing if Belmont can get back to the tournament, if Tennessee State can break through. That's always fun to watch. When we come back, we'll get to Penny Collins. We'll talk about the Tennessee State Tigers. We'll also talk about the partnership between TSU and the Predators that was announced yesterday. We'll get into the Predators and their road trip and that wacky game that they played last night. It was back and forth. You probably had three ulcers, a couple of seizures, a couple of throwing things at the TV, a couple of leaps going airborne when things went their way. It was back and forth. It was a exciting hockey game. Predators win it in a shootout. It was just flat out crazy, but they got it done. They're back home. They play tomorrow night against the Vegas Golden Knights, who are in action tonight in Carolina. So we're doing it all today. We're talking a little bit of hockey. We'll even, at some point today, get into the soccer situation. Been reading about that. What's going on? They have not started to build the stadium here. We'll try to lay out what the deal is going forward because it looks like people are going to have to wait to play in that new venue. Of course, they're about to play in the MLS. They have reached the top level. They're playing in the MLS this year. They're playing at the football stadium, but their new soccer stadium looks like it's been pushed back a good ways, and we don't even know right now exactly how long that will be. Steve Lehman will join us from News Channel 5. He'll be joining the crew here in just a few moments. Brian Penny Collins, head coach at TSU, coming up next. Just getting started here on Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. All right, it is time to talk a little basketball. As we promised earlier here on Darren Donick and Chase, we're going to be joined by Coach Penny Collins. Tennessee State Tigers, winners last night in their game. They are now 13-9 on the season, 5-4 in the OVC. And they're on the road to take on Tennessee Tech coming up tomorrow. And Coach Collins joins us. Hey, Penny, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Doing real good this morning. Hey, Willie, we came a long way since the high school sports show, didn't we?
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. Boy, you know, speaking of going down memory lane, Penny, I got to tell you, I was going through some old stuff. It's one of those cases where I was looking for one thing, and I was digging through all kinds of stuff, and I didn't find the thing I was looking for, but I found all these other old things that I hadn't seen in a long time. Mm-hmm. I had my scorecard, my pregame study guide, if you will, just my game chart, for the Belmont at Missouri game way back when you were playing, and the Belmont Bruins went to Columbia, Missouri, and upset the Tigers. I'm sure you remember that night very well.
Of course I do. That was a monumental night and a huge moment in Belmont history, man. I'll never forget that.
So I was looking over my notes, you know, I was looking at what did I write about each guy. You know, I was like, it was Penny Collins, you know, Whites Creek High School, all the basic stuff. You know, here's his height and everything. But it had, like, tidbits on how you'd done the last couple of games. And I was writing down all the guys. It was just fun to go back and think about that game.
It was a special moment, man. And they were ranked in the country. And, I mean, I remember after we won that game, it felt like it was a championship for us. And we actually spawned that into the beginning of something special for Belmont.
Do you remember kind of the vibe in there? What I always remember was, like, the people that followed Missouri at the time, I don't think they could have told you where Belmont was. Not even close. They would have been completely guessing, right, if they were to try to find out.
Yeah, well, the temperature of that game, though, Missouri was ranked number 3 in the country earlier in that year. So they were, you know, they had a lot of expectations for that team. Quinn Snyder was the head coach, coached in the NBA now with the Jazz. And, you know, they were ranked 23 in the country at the time we played them. And I remember that it was just so quiet in the gym. It was a sold-out game, but it was so quiet because they couldn't believe they were getting beat. And they started throwing stuff on the court. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
They started throwing stuff on the court late in the game. And, you know, we had the game sold up. And Steve Draven, who's shooting like 90-something percent, 96% from the free throw line, to seal the game, this man missed the free throw. So Adam Mark got the rebound, luckily, and kicked it back to Steve. And he made him the second time. And we shook hands. We didn't celebrate. We didn't say nothing. And then we got in that locker room, and we jumped up and down and partied. It was a very, very good moment.
I also remember the bus ride. We rode the bus all the way back to Nashville that night. That's not a short trip, but it felt like it was flying by just because we relived the game like 3 times, you know?
Yes. That was a fun moment. Do you remember? I'm not sure if that's the same trip that you were in the hot tub with us and we were all talking basketball. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. That was later in the season. I think that was a little further south. I think, was a Boca Raton, I think.
Yeah. You're right.
Yeah, there was a lot of guys in the hot tub that night. That was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. A lot of fond memories, man. It's glad I had a chance to be a part of it.
Well, let's fast forward to your club right now. Tennessee State is you guys have taken a really nice step forward here. Got a big road win last night. Those are never easy to come by. You went through a tough portion of your schedule. You played some pretty good teams here. So kind of assess your situation at the midway point of the league schedule.
Yeah, you know, for us, you know, we're 5-4 right now. We really feel like we let a couple games get away from us. But we've been hit hard with the injury bug, man. We had 11 really strong, good rotation guys, and now, we were always whittled down all the way to 7 guys. So we were playing with 7 guys the last three games. And we got 2 back for this past game on Thursday. And as soon as we get those 2 guys back, we lost our starting point guard who had the flu. So he didn't play last night. So, you know, we're hoping to get him back tomorrow or next week, and then so we can get back to full strength. So we haven't played with our full team since maybe late December. So if we can get these guys back healthy at the right time for this second half on the OVC, we'll put ourselves in a position to try to finish up a little stronger than we started.
So how do you feel about how things are coming together in your big picture? Because as you take over, I'm sure you're assessing what you have coming back and who's coming in and transfers and all that stuff. Do you like the steps you guys have taken since you got there?
Yes. You know, year number one, it was exactly what we thought it would be. You know, it's going to be a learning year and opportunity for us to kind of get a feel for everything. And we accumulated what we could. You know, we were able to win 9 games. We were 1 game out of 5th place. And last year we had a lot of injuries as well. But going into year number 2, we've already increased that win total to 13. And we got, 9 games left, something like that. So we got an opportunity to take a big step forward in year number 2. And the main thing that we really are focused on, we're trying to go out and get guys that have good character, and they can play basketball as well. They want to come in and get a degree, and we really feel like we flipped the roster in a positive way, and we just got to continue to on that path. And, you know, this is still just the beginning of something really special here at TSU.
You got a really nice game last night from Shakeem Johnson. He's had a nice year overall for you, a guy that gets a lot done in the paint.
Yeah, you know, we've been knowing Shakeem since he was a freshman in junior college. He led the country in field goal percentage as a JUCO player last year. And it's not ironic that he's leading OVC in field goal percentage right now. And he's 9-for-11 last night, 18 points, 10 rebounds. And he's just a really good player, really good person. Another just really, really good person to be around and lovely to talk to. And I expect big things out of him. And when he's playing like that, we're a really good team.
Well, one thing I've noticed, and we were just talking about Austin Peay last week, and the OVC has good shooters. You guys shoot the ball well. It wasn't a great night for you last night, but overall you guys could shoot the three very well.
Yep.
And I've been asking all the coaches that we've had on the effect of moving the line back a little bit. Have you guys seen much of a difference? I know overall the numbers are down maybe a percentage point across the country, but how does it affect the game?
I think it affects the game big time. I really wasn't a fan of it when they decided to push it back. Understood why. But they thought it would create more driving lanes and more angles, more spacing. But I think it's really about the same. I haven't really put much emphasis and thought on it. We don't talk about it so that it could be a hindrance to us. But our guys can shoot it. But I think it really hurts more those stretch four guys, you know, that are not really great shooters, but good shooters. And when you push them back a step, it hurts them. And especially late in games, you see it affecting on shot being short from guys that are – they usually make those shots.
Interesting announcement yesterday, Brian. I know you're aware of it. And tomorrow night, if you're coming to the Predators game, you're going to see a little Tennessee State flavor at the game. It's sort of a TSU night. You're going to have a little bit of the band playing, which is always, I mean, if you've ever been to a game at the Gentry Center, the atmosphere is just awesome. And so they're going to bring a little bit of that ingredient into Smashville tomorrow. But, Penny, it's a big announcement that they made, trying to raise $1 million over the next month, and it's going to set up a fund for students who are doing well academically but are falling a little short financially, need a little help to continue to pay for their education. I think it's a great idea.
Yes. Our president, Dr. Glover, she's an innovative person, and she's an elite fundraiser and just an elite person as well. And the partnership that she came up with the Predators is a genius. Unfortunately, I wish I could be there tomorrow, but we play Tennessee Tech. But you are absolutely right. Our band's going to be there, so they're going to add an amazing atmosphere to the Preds games. I'm a big time all Tennessee sports. I'm a big time fan. Titans, Predators, soccer team. I'm a big time fan, so I'm excited about the Predators and the partnership, and hopefully we can do something with them as well.
You know, sometimes, especially on shows like this, and you know, we're talking about, in many cases, scholarship athletes, right? That's not, they have a full ride, et cetera. But there's a lot of kids out there that are fighting their way through school. They're working jobs on the side to pay tuition that you almost take for granted. I know I do. I was fortunate enough to have a scholarship. I didn't have to think about that kind of stuff. But that was kind of the message of Sean Henry in the press conference yesterday. There's a lot of kids, they just need a little help to get through and finish their degree so they can move on and reach their potential.
Yeah, you know, and I see these kids every day, and they're not just on Tennessee State's campus. They're on every campus across the country of students that just are giving their best effort, and they're trying their hardest, and they're dealing with so much back at home and have so many different struggles that financially should be the last thing some of these students are worried about. And, you know, when we have people step up and able to donate to help the next generation of leaders get through college without having to worry about finances, it goes a really long way.
All right, Penny, before we let you go, who do you like in the Super Bowl on Sunday?
Man, that's a great question. I'm a ride with the Chiefs. I just think their offense is too highly powered, and the quarterback is the way he did to our Titans, man. I just if he's in that kind of rhythm right now, then I think he'll have a really good Super Bowl. But I think it can really go either way. But if I had to pick, I'm going to go with the Chiefs.
All right. Well, Penny, it's great to catch up. As always, good luck against Tennessee Tech coming up tomorrow, and for the rest of your season, we'll catch up with you down the road.
All right, really appreciate you. Thanks for having me on.
All right. That's Brian Penny Collins, Whites Creek High School, played at Belmont for Rick Byrd, has bounced around. In fact, one of the stops that he made on his journey was at East Tennessee State under Steve Forbes, and they're having one heck of a year. In fact, I meant to ask him about that squad, even though he's you know, has plenty to deal with his own team. But, you know, he is a guy that's really worked his way up the ranks and a guy that's easy to root for. You know, a homegrown guy trying to do it here in Nashville.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, Willie. He's a great guy. He's got good history. I walked in as you were talking about that win over Missouri, and as an Illinois guy, I'm like, beat Missouri. Let's talk about this for like 15 minutes or whatever. But, you know, those memories are awesome. And that's what's so cool is he knows what it takes to win at that level because he did it at Belmont. He was part of the teams that really put Belmont on the map. And now he's at Tennessee State trying to do his own thing and building off what Dana Ford did there in his own way. And, I mean, if you look at that team right now, they're a totally different team, even with all the injuries he talked about, than they were at the beginning of this season and that they were last year. So he's definitely making progress.
Yeah, I did not even realize all of the struggles they had with injuries. But because even with all that, it's a nice step forward that they've made. But you wonder what they could do, what they can do if they can get everybody together for the stretch run.
I think the question now, because those games last week were on the road, is they're definitely better. It's what level better are they? Because I think they're definitely in that second group in the OVC right now. The question is, can they beat a Belmont? Can they beat an Austin Peay? Can they beat a Murray State? Because to me right now, those are clearly the three best teams at the top of the league. And can Tennessee State get themselves into that mix? Can they be a top four seed and get a bye in the OVC tournament? Because then obviously your chances of a run improve greatly if you can get yourself in that position.
Well, it's interesting. If they can take care of Tennessee Tech, which is a team that's struggling a little bit, but anytime you go on the road, nothing is a given. The next three are against that first tier. They've got Austin Peay and Murray State at home next week, and then they go to Belmont on Thursday the 13th. So, interesting stretch of the schedule.
Get healthy quick.
Yeah.
Get healthy quick. Get those guys back.
Steve Lehman from News Channel 5 is with us. And when we come back, we'll bounce around a couple of different things off of him. And then at 10:45, we'll end the hour by going out to San Francisco. We'll get some 49ers perspective from, is it Bonte Hill?
Correct. Okay. Bonte Hill.
Bonte Hill from 95.7 The Game. Stay tuned. We're coming back with more here on Darren Donick and Chase, 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, we'll go out and get some 49ers insight in our next segment. Alan Bell will join us next hour as well as we continue to set up the Super Bowl for you. Steve Lehman is with us from Channel 5. So, Steve, I'm curious this week for you. You know, it's a little bit more laid back. The Titans are out. You know, they had a great run, and then there's that sort of decompression. But Super Bowl week is always exciting. But how do you put together your plan? With the Predators playing, you got college basketball starting to inch forward and the storylines are developing there. You've got this soccer story going on. So what have you been doing this week? For example, last night, how did you put your show together? What games did you watch? What was of interest to you?
I mean, so for the most part, I always operate under, if it happened right now, it generally leads. So, you know, on a night like last night, the Predators game is going to be top of the list for me. And then you move on to other things. So, like, the soccer thing became an important story yesterday because it happened right then. You'll move down and cover. I think the Super Bowl makes the show every day this week because it's the Super Bowl and people are just interested and you can always get the hype. And obviously, Commissioner Goodell talked on Wednesday, and so you throw those things in the list. But it just, I mean, it kind of depends on what's going on. But unlike, you know, when the Titans were playing and still in the playoffs, the show every day was like 2.5 minutes of Titans and then throw in whatever else is out there. Now that's not the case. Now it's like, okay, who played tonight? Who won tonight? What's the big story? And that's kind of how you piece it together.
That was quite the game last night.
Oh, my.
You know, it's interesting with the Predators. If you look at the two games that they played against the Capitals and the two games they played against the Devils, both were very similar. They were both wacky, high-scoring games that changed momentum several times. One team couldn't stop the other. But still, when you watch a game like that, it is just, it's amazing to watch because in hockey, you still, even though the rules have been tweaked to try to help offenses, they want more games like we saw last night. When you get one, it is a roller coaster ride.
Oh, yeah. And I think this furthers my belief, Willie, that this team hasn't quite gotten that lockdown mentality to them because, you know, there was a time when the Predators would get a lead, like in the third period, even if it's a goal lead. There was a time where you felt like, okay, with this defense and that goaltending, they're going to lock it down from here and the game's over. I don't feel like that with this team right now. Whatever the score is on the scoreboard, I don't have the feeling that, like, okay, they've got this in control. They're just going to put it away. And that's the thing they're going to have to figure out in the final 32 games or whatever is left in the season, is they're going to have to figure out how, when they get that 3-2 lead in the third period, that they can ice it away for 12 minutes and ensure that they get 2 points.
And on the other side, they have shown the ability to come back. They had an early lead in the game last night, but then they kept falling behind and they kept coming back. They had three different mini comebacks, if you will. And you go in with the idea that they're better than the Devils and you should be able to push forward and run away with it, but it just didn't happen. I do think that they still have a lot of work to do in terms of their management of whether they're trying to protect the lead, come back, or if it's a tie game, whatever. They still have too many breakdowns that are hurting them. It's certainly not helped by they've got to get Ryan Ellis back. That will help a lot. It's just my theory anyway. Colton Sissons did come back last night, but he was clearly rusty. That line was the line that really struggled at even strength. But at least they have the energy. This is what we observed in our little circles last night. Our broadcast, of course, we're sitting there last night. It's so different watching from your couch than being in
right.
In the customary seat that we have, but
on back-to-back nights, too. That's gonna be weird.
But the drive, the energy, the will, the edge, that was there. Right now, they've just got to clean up some of the little details that could maybe save them a goal. Because still, they've got to find a way to get that goals against down.
Oh, for sure. I look at this trip, so I think this is obviously a great road trip to go and play back-to-back games. One of them against the best team in hockey on the road. And to walk away with 4 points, you've got to be ecstatic about that, given where this team is right now. But at the same time, like I said, you know, there's lapses in both of these games that you see that look like the team that's played now for 60 games or 55 games or whatever it is. And that's a bit troubling. The thing that is nice is what you saw is you saw a little bit of that pushback. There have been times this year, you know, the Winter Classic to me is always the one that's going to stand out because it was under such a microscope. But you have a breakdown, and then you have another breakdown, and it just kind of snowballs. And this team hasn't always been able to correct that. The last couple of nights, I mean, Washington's the best example. They had that lapse. I mean, three of those goals, late first period into the second period, they were gift-wrapped. They were just mistakes you cannot make. And that's the type of stretch that you wonder, like, uh-oh, is that the thing that just breaks them in this game? And all of a sudden, it's like a 5-3 loss. Well, they come back in the third period, and they figure out a way to get 2 goals and win. That, to me, was a huge moment for them. And we'll see if they can carry it forward and take the confidence from that. But the way they actually pushed back the last two nights, I think, was important.
I think you're 100% right on that. Like another good example specifically last night, the game is tied. A guy takes a penalty. Matt Duchene was called for a high stick. The guy acted, right? It was a phantom high stick. It was the right angle. The guy did the head bob. He got the sell. If you looked at it from a certain angle, it was clear that there was no contact with the head, not even the visor, not even the strap of the helmet, nothing. They cashed in. That's if you kill that penalty, then nobody would be talking about that the next day. If you lose the game, and that play happens, then it just gives you reason. You're probably sitting there going, well, that was a big play in the game. Fortunately, like you said, they overcame it, right? They found a way. Even though they weren't able to kill off the penalty, they fought back and they won the game. And so that ends up being something that just happens in a game. It seems like when those things have happened against them in the past, as you said, they have not been able to overcome it. There hasn't been that kind of pushback. So that was a thumbs up. The other thing I thought about a lot, if you look at their record, they have not played very well in overtime, right?
Right.
The overtime points can really make a team's record look a whole lot different if you just do a little bit better in those three-on-threes. Because you're kind of sitting there, you know, for the last few years, you know, some years they've been pretty good in overtime. Other years, the first couple years of three-on-three, they couldn't buy one in there. Shootouts, different years are different. But they went in having only won four overtime games. I think they were, three. 3-6 or 3-7 in overtime. So big to get that point. I mean, so now when you don't have much margin for error, you know, on the average, one of every four games goes to overtime. There seems to be more of them as the season goes along. Having the confidence boost of winning a shootout like that, and I thought they played pretty well in the 3-on-3. Those points are going to be gigantic coming up.
And that's one area, too, and I don't have the evidence to back this up, but just anecdotally, I feel better in the shootout against Pekka, or with Pekka. I don't know if that's experience just because he's been there so many more times than UC or the way he's playing.
His record is a lot better than UC.
But that was a moment last night when they went into that shootout. I thought, thank heavens Pekka's in goal because I feel like they can win this. And that's another thing as you think about this goalie platoon that they're working on down the stretch of the season that I think you have to factor in a bit because you're right. I think you are going to see more of these overtime games down the stretch. And you point out that record. I mean, if you just get to 500 in that record and add two more points onto their total, well, now you're talking about a team that's probably in the last playoff position. And it's not quite as dire of a circumstance as we look at right now. But you struggle in those overtime games, and you are where you are. So you got to figure that out. I mean, I remember the year they actually made the run to the cup. Wasn't that the year that they were like 2-14 or something like that? And
I think
3-on-3.
Over a 2-year span, I think they went for a long time without being able to buy a game.
That's part of the reason they snuck into the playoffs that year is because
they had a lot of overtime.
They couldn't get two points in any overtime game. And when you play a bunch of overtime games, that can be a huge impact at some point.
Mm-hmm. One other thing, too. This is the interesting dynamic that goes on. For weeks, we've been talking about they have games in hand. They have games in hand. And there were a lot of people that would scoff and say, forget about the games in hand. You know, because it looks dire. Like when you see you're 6 points out, you're 8 points behind this team or that team. But these were two games in hand where they played back-to-back nights and a lot of the teams that they're chasing weren't playing. So this was where they closed the gap because of where the bye week was falling.
Yep.
And so it looks a whole lot better today than it did two nights ago. I mean, now all of a sudden, I don't know how the team handles that. Like, to me, the more important thing is, hey, there's still 30-something games left. So many twists and turns can happen. Even if today they were sitting in a playoff spot, it doesn't mean that they've solved all the issues, right? So they have to, but at the same time, it could give you maybe a little energy boost that you look in the standings and you've leaped a couple teams. Now all of a sudden you're one notch behind the last playoff spot and you're playing one of the teams in your next game that's one notch ahead of you.
Well, it's so condensed in the standings, especially in the Central Division. I mean, the difference between last place and third place is not very far. And so if you get on a little run, you can make up some ground in a hurry. As you mentioned, two wins in two nights, things look a whole lot better for the Predators. But that's the thing, is there's no time to rest or sit on your laurels off of this. You just have to keep playing, and you've got to play as well as you have the last two nights down the stretch of the season, or even better, because it's going to be a sprint with all these teams over the final 30 games. Because when you look at the Central Division, I mean, you can make an argument that all of them right now think that they've got a shot to go to the playoffs. Every single one of them. And down the stretch of 30 games, 4 probably get in, maybe 5 get in. And so it's going to be an absolute war to figure out who are the teams that emerge.
Nashville has now played 2 less games than Vegas, 3 less games than Arizona, who coughed up a point last night. They had a lead in the third period at home against the Kings, lost in the overtime, or I forget if it was a shootout or overtime. So they pick up a point. Nashville's got 3 games in hand on them, 3 points behind. 2 points behind Vegas, having played 2 less games. Vegas plays tonight in Carolina. Carolina and Vegas coming off the bye week. So it's one of those, what are you going to see? I don't know.
Who knows?
So
I generally would favor the home team coming off a bye week like that as opposed to the team that fly across country, but who knows?
Yeah, and then Nashville will host them tomorrow. Remember the last time that Vegas came in, Nashville had the lead with literally 1 second left, and Vegas made the play, scored with 0.2 on the clock, and then won in overtime. So that will be discussed, I'm sure.
Well, and if the Predators don't ultimately get to where they expect to go this year and get into the playoffs, that's going to be one of those games that you look back on and think, gosh, that was a game where they let something slip away from them.
Right. Well, literally, if that last second goes differently, or really it's the last 4 or 5 seconds, and that Nashville cleared the puck with about 10 seconds left, it was a mad scramble to get it in, and then you know, only just, yeah, I went back and watched the play probably like everybody that game, watched it, you know, 10, 12 times.
How
does this happen? And you're just thinking, if he just does this for one more second or half a more second, they don't have time. And just, and you have to credit Vegas. They made an incredible play to do it. But
that changes the standings.
The standings would be 55 for Vegas, 56 for Nashville, just in that second. But instead, it's 57 for Vegas, 55 for Nashville.
Right. And
nothing you can do about it now.
And you still have games in hand. But yes, that changes things dramatically.
Yep. When we come back, we'll switch gears again. We have a well-rounded first hour here. A little hoops, a little pucks. Now we go to the pigskin. When we come back, we will talk Super Bowl with Bonte Hill. He covers the 49ers for 95.7 The Game out of the Bay Area. Stay tuned. We're coming back. We are back here on Darren Donick and Jace. Willie Donick, Steve Lehman here with you today. And we are checking in out in San Francisco to talk 49ers and the Super Bowl with Bonte Hill from 95.7 The Game. Bonte, thanks a lot for joining us.
Good morning, fellas, or I should say good afternoon out there, man. Ready to talk some Super Bowl.
Well, let's talk some Super Bowl. I'll tell you, what has this week been like for you covering this team? I mean, the 49ers have such a tremendous history. And, of course, they had the one appearance. In fact, I just caught the 30-minute Super Bowl highlight NFL Films thing, which is kind of a yearly tradition, right? You got to watch it.
Right.
I used to be able to have, like, every line memorized from those things until up to a certain age, and now it's getting a little harder to have it all. But
right.
It was fun just reviewing that game. But, I mean, for the 49ers, they went through a really tough stretch there, and then all of a sudden, boom, it's all come together.
I mean, I look at the kids who are 30 and younger, right? All the football fans, 49er fans, who are 30 and under, who really don't know about Steve Young, Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, Ronnie Lott, and the glory days. You know, I was 12 years old. 12 years old when the Niners won their last Super Bowl 25 years ago in Miami against the Chargers. So everybody, you know, 35, 34 and under, you know, they're watching this team and are watching this franchise after the Giants won 3 World Series championships, the Warriors going on their 5-year run winning 3 championships. They really didn't know the Niners as winners. You know, there's been 3 winning seasons with Harbaugh, one with Steve Bariucci when he got fired after they lost to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers the same year. They won the Super Bowl, and that's it. Niner fans have been deprived of success. They've been deprived of a stable organization, you know, with the way Jed York can run things. But, look, he caught lightning in a bottle. He did it with Jim Harbaugh. He wasn't graceful then. He humbled himself, gave Shanahan and Lynch the 6-year deals. And now 49er fans are just – it's just euphoric out here in the Bay Area, thinking about this team and where they came from. 4 wins last year, no road wins, to playing in 4-5 best games of the season against the Saints, the Ravens, the Seahawks, L.A. Rams. I mean, it's been a remarkable season, and it's caught everybody by surprise.
I want to ask you, because I can go back, and Steve, you did some shows with us during this time, when Jimmy Garoppolo took over and started getting it done 2 years ago, they mm-hmm. actually beat the Titans in a really big game.
That.
It was a very exciting game, and it was a game the Titans really needed. They got around it. They found a way into the playoffs anyway. But you could start to see that the 49ers were starting to get it going. Then, of course, Garoppolo gets hurt, and that kind of derailed them. So what were your expectations going into this year for the 49ers, knowing that he would be back?
Well, the expectations were low because – last year, he injures his ACL in week 3, obviously against the Kansas City Chiefs. And you look at the way he looked in the preseason. He looked skittish. He looked rattled. So after a season in which, and I remember that Titans game because that was a big game. That was a big day for the Bay because it was like Jimmy Garoppolo's first home game as a starter. You're playing the Titans who are playing for a playoff spot and who did go to the playoffs this year. You guys know that. And so the expectations last year was 10 wins. And they didn't get that. They didn't come close to it. So this year, the way Jimmy Garoppolo was looking, you know, skittish in the pocket, you heard about the practice where he threw 5 straight interceptions off 5 consecutive plays. The expectations lowered. It was about a 7-8 win. You know, hey, if they win 10 wins, if they're in a hunt by November 1st, great, we'll take that out here. But that's how far. And I caution fans this in the preseason. Even though I thought this team would only win about 7 or 8 games, I said, look how far we've fallen from the glory days. People are just begging for an 8-8 season. They're begging for the 49ers to go 8-8. I said, geez, what happened to the days of Super Bowl or bust?
Begging for 8-8. That's a good. That's an interesting thought. Yeah,
right. We're praying for 8-8. That's how bad it got out here. So the expectations were not high at all. You didn't know about Nick Bosa. Hell, we didn't know even know if Nick Bosa was going to play in the first game against Tampa Bay. Where was Richard Sherman at? Who's going to play wide receiver? I mean, it looked grim out here. It was fans were not expecting much. They definitely wasn't expecting a trip to Miami for Super Bowl 54.
Bonte Hill's our guest. He does pre- and post-game for the 49ers on the game out in San Francisco. Bonte, when you look at Jimmy Garoppolo, what type of quarterback is he exactly? Because people are going to look at that NFC Championship game where he threw the ball 8 times, and some people are going to say, you know, he's just the game manager behind that incredible rushing attack that the 49ers have. But you also point out when he wasn't there a year ago, this was a totally different team. Right. So what does Jimmy Garoppolo mean behind center for the Niners?
Well, I think people forgot about 2017, and I'm glad you guys brought up that Titans game because that was so pivotal in the minds of 49er fans into believing they have a franchise quarterback. Now, he plays that first game against Chicago back in 2017. They don't score a touchdown, but he commands the huddle. You know, he goes to Texas. It plays in Houston, Texas. And he commands the huddle. And in that Titans game, as you mentioned, where he threw over 300 yards, Jimmy Garoppolo is a quarterback that will do whatever's asked of him. If it's hand the ball off 47 times like they did against the Minnesota Vikings, he's going to hand the football off 47 times. If you need him to pass it 30 times or 35 times, that's a thing that he can do as well. And he had to do it during a stretch in which they had a lot of injuries. They had, you know, Joe Staley was out for a while. Mike McGlinchey was out for a while. You know, you look at the defensive side of the football. Quan Alexander was out for a while. D4, so the defense was giving up a lot more points. And they had to be in some shootouts. They had to score. And Garoppolo, you look at this stretch starting on Halloween when they played the Arizona Cardinals, and he threw for over 304 touchdowns. He was great on third down. By the way, he's a top-5 quarterback when it comes to third down conversions and completion percentage. Then you look at the Monday night game, and everybody said, well, we don't know about him. You know, the receivers dropped a lot of passes. He got hit. Look, he's a guy who's going to throw some risky passes. I call him the Jimmy O no throws. If you can stay away from the Jimmy O no throws, I think he's fine. So he's a quarterback who's capable of winning in a shootout. He's capable of being a game manager. He's capable of just leading a football team. But that's the thing. His team is behind him, and they have his back. So whatever the nation wants to call him, a game manager, a gunslinger, a guy who's prone to turnovers, whatever it is. But the fact is, this guy in his first full season as a starting quarterback in the NFL led a team to 13-3, and when it was time to ball out, he balled out. Just look at the Saints game. Look at the Rams game on Saturday Night Football. Look at the Seahawks game in Week 17. Garoppolo's a fine, fine quarterback. He's a top 15, top 12 quarterback, and he's a leader of it.
So when I look at this team, I actually see a pretty similar matchup to what I saw of the Titans against the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game. I see a team that is capable of running the football and controlling possession, keeping the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hand. I see a team that's got a quarterback that the guys believe in and is capable of making plays when it comes. And I see a pretty darn good defense that goes up against Mahomes and that crew. But what happened to the Titans is eventually Mahomes gets going, and they couldn't slow him down. What makes you think that the 49ers defense or the way the 49ers play as a whole can match up better than ultimately what the Titans did in KC?
You know what? Looking back at the AFC Championship game, I thought Tennessee had a flaw there. They made a tactical error in the third quarter. Guys are down four. You know, you force Kansas City to punt. You know, there was a couple punts. There was no scoring, you know, for the most of that third quarter. And I thought the Titans became one too predictable on offense when it came to running Derrick Henry. I thought they should have mixed in some play action passing on first down. And defensively, Mahomes just figured it out. You know, that defense is decimated. Obviously, you weren't getting the pass rush that you wanted. So you just can't hold up for 5 seconds against that track team they have at the wide receiver position. So I think with the Niners, it all starts up front. It all starts with the defensive line. Can you get pressure on Patrick Mahomes by rushing just four? Can you get pressure on him? Because if you blitz him, he's going to kill you. If you sit back in his zone, he's going to kill you. So can you get pressure with the front four? That's the key to the game, fellas. It's really that simple. KC's offensive line is pretty good. I understand that. But Bosa, Armstead, Buckner, and Ford, they're the key to this football game. Can they get the Mahomes and hit him a little bit? And the one thing the Niners do have going for them as well is they're a team that doesn't miss many tackles. They're one of the best tackling football teams in the NFL. They're physical. When they hit you, they hit you. So some of these speed guys, if they take a couple pops early, I wonder how they react, because all of a sudden they're not so fast after getting hit a couple times. So it all starts up front with that defensive line, fellas. hitting Mahomes, getting to Mahomes. And also, you got to play a little keep away. There's no doubt about that. You want to take your time on offense. But I also think Shanahan will allow Garoppolo to throw a little more on first down. Because what I noticed with Kansas City, you guys noticed, they just started to put 8-9 in the box and said, Henry's not running on us. And I believe they're going to do that with the Niners running game as well.
Before we let you go, Bonte, I want to ask you about one more guy because he's taken up residence here in Nashville, George Kittle. And I didn't even know this until last summer. I guess he just has done this in the last year or two. But he is such an interesting personality to go with an amazing talent. What's it like to cover him every day?
Oh, man, it's entertaining. He's always going to give you a sound bite. He's always going to have a minute for you. He's always going to make people laugh. I mean, he is, you know, we were talking about this on my show out here in San Francisco. You know, who's going to be the guy who could benefit the most from a Super Bowl win? Who's going to catapult themselves into a national superstar? You know, George Kittle's an NFL superstar. He's kind of crossed over with the WWE. You see all the videos with The Rock, and they're cool, and he's going to wrestling events. That's the guy who could become Gronk 2.0. He's kind of just wild. And you just think about the toughness this guy displays. First of all, he loves run blocking more than pass catching. I believe he's a better run blocker than a tight end receiver at this point, even though if you get him out of space, it's really tough to block him or tackle him in one-on-one situations. But also, this guy's playing with a boat spur in his ankle, a pop capsule in his kneecap. He's playing with a torn labrum. The guy is an absolute gladiator. So he's one of the fan favorites. Nick Bosa, George Kittle, it's just different when they make plays. This fan base loves George Kittle. It's a blast covering this guy. I mean, think about it. The guy was a fifth-round pick coming out of Iowa, and now he's one of the best football players in all the NFL. I mean, it's a joy to watch this guy every single day, man. That's for sure.
Well, the tight ends will be featured in this game, no question. Bonte, great stuff. Hey, thank you very much. Enjoy the ride here, and best of luck on Super Bowl Sunday.
Hey, great talking to you guys, man. Enjoy the Super Bowl, man. Pray for my Niners. It's gonna be a tough one. Mahomes is a bad, bad boy.
All right, Bonte. That's Bonte Hill, radio host, San Francisco 95.7. The game does work on the 49ers radio network. On the other side, we'll continue to talk what's going on here, and also we'll mix in a little Titans perspective from Steve. And then Alan Bell will join us at 11:15. So talking some Super Bowl when we come back in hour number two here on Darren, Donick, and Chase.